This Saturday, April 20th, is Astronomy Day. And it seems like a perfect time, I think, to talk about, let you know what's coming up to celebrate Astronomy Day in Wisconsin and around the state, as a matter of fact, as we visit with Paul Kinzer. Paul has been with us many times. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. He's got his own business relating to astronomy and children. We'll talk about that with him as well. And certainly get your questions and comments as we move along today. Are you an amateur astronomer or just like looking up in the night sky? What fascinates you about it? We were in the Cambridge area, near the Cambridge Golf Course last Saturday night, and got out of the a trivia event there, and looked up in the night sky, and it was just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah,
it was wonderful. Paul, great to have you back, by the way.
Well, it's good to be here.
An Astronomy Day, obviously, we have an Astronomy Day to call attention to our stars, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, every year we have one in the spring and then in the fall. And the spring one seems to be, I think, more popular because we've all been stuck inside for so long. Although in the winter, that's when it gets dark early. So
yeah.
If the sky is clear, it's good to get out. But it does seem that the one that's typically, they try and schedule it as close to the quarter moon as they can in late April. So yeah. It can even be in early May, but it's this Saturday.
What's going on in the night skies right now?
Well, it's actually great. Jupiter is still up there. It takes 12 years to go around the sun, and where it is in the sky right now, it was very prominent this winter, right above Orion. Mm-hmm. And we're getting further into spring, and Orion is a winter constellation, so Jupiter is getting lower every night, but it's still up there to look at. And just as it's leaving the skies, here comes Saturn. Saturn is now rising at about 9 p.m., and for the next few months, it will be in our evening skies. Now, because of the time of the year that it's high in the skies, it's not quite as high. It's fairly low, and yet, if you have even a small telescope, you can see Saturn's rings. There are a couple of constellations that are popular that are up there now. Gemini is pretty high in the sky as it gets dark. And Leo is now coming into our night skies. It's considered a spring constellation. And behind Leo, right near his tail, there's lots and lots of galaxies. You usually need a bit bigger telescope to see those and darker skies. But between Leo and the constellation Virgo, there are many, many galaxies, and spring is considered galaxy season.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. We are talking with Paul Kinzer today about Astronomy Day and stargazing. We'd love to have you join in with your questions or comments. Maybe you have questions about the telescopes or even binoculars that you might use. Maybe you've got some and you want to know more about them. I hope you'll call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. You know, I think it's interesting. NASA has just announced plans to capture an asteroid.
That's right. Just
what's the purpose?
Within the last week. Well, you remember that I was on the show not that long ago, right after that meteor nearly crashed into a city in Russia. And we are getting to the point where we may have the technology to stop an asteroid that might be deadly to the Earth. But we need to know more about them. How are they held together? How many are there? We need to find that out. Where are they? And we part of this is an experiment to see if we've figured out a way to move an asteroid. And the plan on this one is for a fairly small asteroid, only 100 to 500 tons, which might seem large, but for an asteroid, it's not that large. Their plan is to send a spacecraft out to one that is in an orbit close to the Earth, an orbit around the sun, capture it, bring it somewhere near Earth, park it in an orbit, and have astronauts go and check it out. Another reason to do this is minerals. Some of these are made of metal and we could really, really get some rare metals. Metals that are rare on Earth are quite common in some of these asteroids. There are also private companies who have announced that they're planning on doing stuff, and some of them are backed by some of the more prominent billionaires in the world. They think this is a thing worth doing.
Well, if you can find rare mineral or metals that mm-hmm. would, you might even actually make it pay for itself.
Well, you know, one thing I read recently, and I'm no expert on this, but platinum, all the platinum in the world, I read, has come out of meteorites.
Ah.
So that's where we get it from, and don't quote me on that. Although I heard what I consider an expert say that. So,
wow,
yeah.
Here's another little story I thought was kind of interesting. The Curiosity rover has found more evidence of water.
That's right.
On Mars.
That's right. It drilled down into a rock. It was sent there. That was one of the things it was sent to do. Drilled down into a rock and it found clay. And my reading says that clay forms when rock is exposed to water for a long period of time. And it needs to be water that is neither acid nor too alkali. One of the scientists working on the Curiosity mission said that he thinks this, if you had been in this place at the time the water was there, you could have drunk the water.
And wow.
So a benign place for life. They haven't found all the building blocks of life yet, but that's one of its missions. And now they have found there was water and it was there long enough for life to have lived in it.
So that's the significance of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. A detector on the International Space Mission has found possible evidence pointing toward dark matter as well.
Yes.
What is dark matter, and why does that dark matter matter?
If I'm no scientist, but if I knew what dark matter was, I'd have a Nobel Prize. That's something that for decades now, scientists have said there must be more out there from the way galaxies interact and the way galaxies rotate and are held together. There isn't enough stuff that we can see to hold it all together. So they're searching, and there are many, many theories, most of which I don't understand, having to do with other particles that just don't interact with ours. That's why it's called dark matter. It's stuff. It has mm-hmm. gravity. But it doesn't interact strongly with the other stuff in the universe. And this detector has found many, many traces of positrons, the opposite mm-hmm. of electrons, antimatter for Star Trek fans. And mm-hmm. there have been strikes on this detector, many more than people had expected. And my reading says that they're thinking this could be evidence, indirect evidence for dark matter, and then other people say, well, it could also have come from a certain kind of star called a pulsar. But then I read not long after that over in Minnesota at the Sudan underground mine, they have detectors that are also finding very, very tiny amounts of evidence that also points toward dark matter.
Oh.
So one of the scientists was quoted that he thinks it could be that in the next 5 to 10 years, this will be a solved problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we got maybe five years, we'll know.
Yeah.
You got an email from Jeff in Madison, who this is a good point. Any 4-H child in Wisconsin can join the state 4-H astronomy project. We have many large telescopes, 6 to 13 inch, and are building an observatory on top of the Baraboo Bluffs in Sauk County.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. My son's in 4-H, so I'm going to have to find out more about this myself.
And as a matter of fact, it's any 4-H age child.
Sure.
So you don't have to be in 4-H, but if you're a 4-H age, which I believe, I'm just trying to remember now, it goes up to 18. I was in 4-H from the time I was
right.
a young kid. So I think it's somewhere around 7 to 18, somewhere
around.
Yeah,
I think it's you can be in it until you've been graduated from high school for a year.
Yeah.
And they have a program called Clover Buds for the very young.
Yeah, and so that's a very, very cool. We'll have to look into that a little bit more. You can join in, too, by the way. Here's the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. I think one of the most spectacular things is to see is the Aurora Borealis. And the Northern Lights Seems to be picking up a little bit now, the activity.
Yeah, I just read a couple of days ago that somebody made a comment and then an astronomer answered. Northern lights are caused by activity on the sun, and we are supposed to be heading towards solar max, where in its 11-year cycle we should be at the maximum activity on the sun. This solar cycle has been pretty dim, though. It hasn't been as strong as others. And yet somebody pointed out that the southern hemisphere of the sun, if you follow sunspots, they typically are in bands across the northern and southern hemisphere of the sun, and they are picking up on the southern hemisphere right now. I just saw on a website called spaceweather.com just yesterday, they had a picture taken in Wisconsin of some minor but some definite reddish glow in the sky of northern lights because of a solar storm.
And it's something we rarely see in southern, especially in the cities. I can remember back about 15 years ago, they're about seeing a nice going out in the evening, and everybody in our block was looking up in the sky. Right. It was a beautiful, beautiful sight. Paul Kinzer talking with us today about all things relating to astronomy. And he's certainly willing and able to answer your questions when you call in. We'll be back with Paul right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Well, whether you're a seasoned astronomer or just someone who appreciates a beautiful night sky without really knowing what you're seeing, the stars, the planets, and the other heavenly bodies are captivating. Certainly are for me. I bet they are for you, too. Spring, a wonderful time to turn our attention upward. There are many events happening around our state for Astronomy Day. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking about those events and about the night sky with Paul Kinzer. He'll be with us until 12:30 today to talk about his passion for amateur astronomy and how you can get started or maybe improve your techniques. He also has some information on equipment you might need if you decide to get into it a little bit more. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Maybe you want to get your kids interested. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll be back right after the news. There are few things that can help us remember how small we are compared to the rest of the universe than gazing up at the stars. Hi, Larry Mueller here. If you're like me, you enjoy looking up and seeing what's new. Even better if you can pick out different planets and stars and understand what's going on. Always a treat when Paul Kinzer comes by. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, does a lot of work with the youth of our state in terms of stargazing. It's great to have him along. Paul, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, it's good to be here.
We have callers online, but there's room for you if you have a question about the stars, about what's going on. There's a lot of Astronomy Day events coming up. Astronomy Day is a Saturday, April 20th. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And just a comment back to, we were talking about 4-H and the astronomy program in 4-H. Got an email from Pat, who says there are three busloads of 4-H middle schoolers from across Wisconsin leaving tomorrow for Huntsville, Alabama, to space camp. Boy, that sounds like fun, doesn't it?
I want to go.
Oh, man. Love that idea. Love that idea. Eric in Oshkosh, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, I have a couple of questions about our moon.
Uh-huh.
First of all, does the moon look different from the northern hemisphere than from the south? So you have a crescent moon. Would it be oriented differently in the different hemispheres?
Yes. If you were in the southern hemisphere, you basically are standing upside down. And down there, the moon, the man in the moon, he's upside down. And in our evening skies, the first quarter moon and the crescent before that we see in the evening sky, it looks like a backward C here. But if you were in Australia or Antarctica, it would look like a forward C. So, yes, it's upside down.
Huh?
And my second question is, have we ever observed an asteroid or a meteor hitting the moon? Have we ever seen any new craters made?
They have found some candidates for possible small craters. And there's a story that I've read. A monk 400 or 500 years ago wrote something about seeing a bright flash on the moon. And people have looked for that in photographs, but the jury's out on whether there's anything recent enough to have seen that. Little ones that maybe don't create craters big enough to see from Earthbound telescopes, those have been spotted now, especially when people aim video cameras during meteor showers. Some have seen little tiny flashes on the dark, unlit side of the moon that is facing the Earth. So, yes, they have been spotted. For a while, people were saying, oh, that can't be. But now they realize, yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Great questions. And Jerry in Burlington, I think, has a moon question, too. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually do have a question about the moon. I was having a discussion with an acquaintance, and this person told me that it's actually possible to see 60% of the moon's surface rather than, I would think, you could only see half. There's a dark side and a lit side.
Right.
But the explanation I got was that there was a discrepancy in how fast they orbit. And because of that, throughout an entire lunar cycle, you actually get exposed to about 60% of the moon's surface. So, is he right about that?
Yeah, he is right about that. It's called libration. And I know I've seen online, you can look up, go to YouTube, I think, and look up lunar libration video. And someone took a picture of the moon every night. As it goes around the Earth, it wobbles a bit. And it wobbles because its orbit is not circular as it goes around the Earth. So moves a little bit ahead, so we see a little of one side, and then it falls behind, and we see a little bit of the other, and it kind of wobbles back and forth and up and down. We typically, I don't think, see 60% in every lunar cycle, but over time, yes, about 60% is visible.
Very cool.
Do you have any idea what causes the wobble?
Right. Well, it's hard to explain if you were here and I could point in the air and use globes, maybe. But again, it's basically because as it goes around us, it goes a little faster in some parts of its orbit, so we kind of see around the corner a bit.
Ah.
And then as it goes further out in its orbit, because it's not circular, and when it's further out, it doesn't go quite as fast, then we see the other side. So it's not truly wobbling. It's just kind of the way it looks.
Ah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling, Jerry. Appreciate it. Email from Lewis, just wondering about the big triangle just to the left of Jupiter facing south is. I think Silca is the bottom star, as it is in a V-shape at night. And why during the early morning, 3 a.m. or so, the triangle turns upside down? I noticed the Big Dipper does the same, flipping 180 degrees from night to early morning.
That's two questions there. That V shape is called the Hyades. It is the face of Taurus the Bull, the constellation Taurus the Bull, and that's where Jupiter is now. A year from now, Jupiter won't be there, but Taurus is always running across the sky away from the constellation Orion. The bright star on the left half of the V in that group of stars is called Aldebaran. Aldebaran is an Arabic word that means the follower, because he follows the star cluster, the Pleiades, across the sky, and that's right nearby. And the reason that it changes its orientation is because the Earth is spinning. The sky is like a globe above our heads, and as the Earth spins, the sun goes up and down, the sky goes around, and yes, the Big Dipper, it goes in a circle because it is in the northern part of the sky, and its handle... well, the whole thing goes in a circle around the North Star.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. We have Chris in Milwaukee. By the way, we have open lines now. You can get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Talking today with Paul Kinzer author of Stargazing Basics. Great to have him with us, and thank you for listening. Let's turn to Chris in Milwaukee next. Hi, Chris.
I have two questions about the Northern Lights. I understand, of course, that this is caused by occasional energy from the sun moving from the sun to the vicinity of the Earth, and then, of course, the pathway is curved by the Earth's powerful magnetic field. My first question is, what speed is the emission moving between the sun and the Earth? I assume this is not the speed of light. And my second question is, for many years, I assumed that the pathway was a simple curve, more or less between the sun and the Earth. And I've now looked at some diagrams, and it looks like the energy moves, well, the particles move beyond the Earth and then make a circuitous pathway back to the front side, the sunward side of the Earth. I'm sorry. It goes beyond the Earth and then makes a counterintuitive pair of curves and then impacts us on the dark side. Am I correct in this?
You are correct in it, and they're only now learning a lot of this stuff. It also does come in a curve towards the other side of the Earth, but that side is the day side, so we don't see them.
Oh.
The particles are coming, and they are highly energetic, but they are physical things. They are subatomic particles, and they typically have a charge, a magnetic electric charge, which is why they follow our magnetic fields down to the Earth. This is stuff that is shot out by the sun. And to answer your first question, the speed can vary. It depends on how powerful that, it's called a coronal mass ejection, how powerful that voof away from the sun was. And it can be 1 or 2 million miles per hour, which is not the speed of light, but it's very, very fast. So when this happens on the sun and we see the light of it, typically it's a day and a half, 2 days later that the material actually gets to the Earth. And what it then does is quite complicated and somewhat mysterious. We're only now learning.
Hmm. Very interesting. Thanks, Chris, for calling. Karen in Plymouth, your turn next. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was wondering if you could recommend a good star chart for novice stargazers and where you would get it. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say a good thing to do is to get a simple planisphere or planisphere. You can say it either way. And they have them, if you just look up that word, it's spelled P-L-A-N-I, sphere, planisphere. Look it up online. You can order it from any bookstore. And if you went to Barnes & Noble, they would have them too in their science sections. Those will show you the constellations and help you get to know the night sky. But if you want a star chart that's also going to show where the sun, the moon, the planets are, that you would probably want to get either some software for. You can get it downloaded on your computer or your smartphone, or a simpler way if you aren't quite ready to do that. You can go to various websites, skyandtelescope.com. They have a star chart. I'm sure space.com from Astronomy Magazine does too. And then there's another website called heavens-above.com. They have a lot of cool stuff, and one of them is you put in your location on Earth, and they will give you an up-to-the-minute star chart. The nice thing about the one at Sky and Telescope is that it you can change the time on it minute to minute, and you can see what'll the sky look like an hour from now, a week from now, 1,000 years from now, or 100,000 years ago. So lots of options out there.
Very cool. Thanks, Karen, for calling. And Dennis in Seymour, hello.
Hello. Just wondering if I'm looking to invest in a telescope, what type, what kind would be the best?
Kind of depends on what you plan on using it for. Do you live in a place that has really dark skies, or do you live in a place where there's quite a bit of light pollution?
No, I would be in an area where it is dark.
Well, most people and I think I would tend to agree. If you, the more you want to see, the bigger you want the lens or mirror on your telescope to be.
Okay.
And to get the most bang for your buck, the thing to go with then is a reflecting telescope, a Newtonian reflecting telescope. They're the least expensive for how big that mirror is going to be. Okay. And there's a type called a Dobsonian, named after a man named John Dobson. He's still alive, who sort of developed it in the 70s. And if you look that up online, that's a good choice to get. If you want to share the view, if you want a lot of people to look through your telescope, a Dobsonian isn't quite the thing to get because as the Earth spins, whatever you're looking at goes out of view pretty quick on those kinds of scopes. If you want to share the view, you want a telescope with what's called an equatorial mount. And it's going to be, you'd have to spend a whole lot of money to get a one big enough to hold a really large telescope. But those are two ideas. And another idea is a pair of binoculars. Before you go with a telescope, a pair of binoculars will show you many, many, many things.
And what size binoculars would be good?
Well, the thing you want in binoculars is the largest aperture, the largest lenses on the front that you can comfortably hold. And for some people, that might be 35 millimeters, and binoculars always have two numbers, like 7 by 35 or 10 by 50. And the first number tells you how much it magnifies. The second number tells you in millimeters the diameter of those lenses. 7 by 35, 10 by 50, those are very common and very good for astronomy and not very expensive.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. That might be the way to start.
Yeah.
Jean in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I went out last night about 9:30 because it was a nice clear night, and I saw my usual Big Dipper and two big planets, one to the west, and I think the other one to the southwest, and I believe one of them is Saturn. Not sure what the other is. And then to the north, slightly east of north, low down, there was a bright star, and I don't know what that was.
And what time was this?
At 9:30 or so last night.
All right, just trying to imagine the sky in my head. The one in the west was probably Jupiter. The one in the southwest was probably the star Sirius, the brightest star in the sky.
And very bright.
Yes, it is. It's the brightest star. And the one in the north of east could have been the planet Saturn, but it's actually probably more south of east. So I'm not quite sure what that one was. But Saturn is rising in the east now, right around that time.
This was just slightly east. Did I say north of east?
Yes.
I should have said east of north.
Oh.
It was close to north. I got it backwards there.
Then I would say it could not have been a planet at this time, and I'm not sure without actually having a star chart in front of me what star that would have been.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, Jean. Thank you.
But the brightest star in the sky right now as it gets dark in the west, that is Jupiter.
I want to ask you about Astronomy Day because we haven't really talked about activities, and I want to get away from
sure.
us. What's happening?
Well, all over the world, really, there are events going on. And the thing about Astronomy Day is it's not, you know, you don't go online and just put Astronomy Day 2013, rather, and up will come millions of results. Most places that are going to do something for Astronomy Day, they're regional, they're local, they're clubs, and typically clubs are just some people who get together and, you know, they're not necessarily keeping things updated, but they may have events. And then what I did the other day was I just went online and I did a Google search for Astronomy Day 2013, Wisconsin, and then I did some fair-sized towns and cities. And then I was able to find the results. And I found several. My astronomy club in La Crosse on the 20th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., if the sun is out, we will have telescopes set up with filters to look at the sun from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then 8 to 10:30 p.m. that night, again, both of these are at Riverside Park in La Crosse, we'll have telescopes out. Now, of course, if it's cloudy, this won't be happening. And then the UW La Crosse has a planetarium, and their April shows are called Saturn, Jewel of the Heavens. And those are at 1 p.m. on Saturdays on the 20th and the 27th. And that's a cool thing. There are many planetariums in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So on Astronomy Day, many of them are also having events. So even if it is cloudy, there may be special events going on, and even if they don't take the telescopes out, they may have telescopes there for people to look at and astronomers there to answer questions. So my advice, because I found information, there's something going on April 27th in Eau Claire. They have a new thing called the Planet Walk. It's a one-mile scale model of the solar system, and they're having events on the 27th. The UW Fox Valley Planetarium in Menasha is having planetarium shows followed by telescope viewing on the 20th. And there are other
lots of others
out there.
We have actually up on, Judith put up on her Facebook, my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, there's a Facebook note with all of the events, or as many as we could
find.
From around the state, which, so it's really well worth looking at. And also, on the page, on my Facebook page, we have a photo that you took, I believe.
Yep. Yes, there's actually two of them. There's been a comet in our skies for the last 6 weeks or so. And in March, I went to Nebraska also to look at Sandhill Cranes. But mm-hmm. I went there and got a photo of right at sunset of comet Pan stars right near the crescent moon, right around sunset. And then that was on March 13th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then on April 3rd, I went out right near my home in Galesville. And now the comet had moved across the sky, and it was right next to the Andromeda Galaxy.
Beautiful shot.
Yeah, it's moving away. People with telescopes and binoculars, if they know what they're doing, could probably still find it in the sky. But it's moving away from the Earth and the Sun now.
Oh, it's the beautiful. I hope you go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and take a look at those photos that Paul took. They're just absolutely gorgeous.
And they were not taken with expensive exotic equipment either, especially the sunset one. That's just a camera on a tripod.
Dick in Bark River, Michigan. Hello.
Hello. Thank you again. Just two short, interesting things I believe are true. People have a car with a logo that is actually the Pleiades, Seven Sisters, Subaru in Japanese, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, there's approximately the last estimates, 200 billion times 200 billion stars estimate, rough estimate. But if you're in an area and you have good eyesight, no light pollution, actually, it's not as many, nearly as many stars. It's about 6,000, am I right?
There's 6,000, and you can only see half of them because the Earth
right.
is in
yeah.
the way.
Hemisphere.
So, yeah.
Oh.
And that's if you're in really dark skies and you have really good eyes. Most of us can probably
people would estimate millions.
Right.
Unless they know real magazines.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that is, yes, you can see 2,000-3,000 stars with your naked eye, but you pick up a pair of binoculars and you bring it up to 100,000 or more.
Oh, yeah, just that quick.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Well, just aim them at the Milky Way.
And oh.
Instead of a haze, you see stars, many, many stars.
Oh. And Paul, I wanted, we haven't mentioned your site, Seeing Stars WI. We actually have that up on my Facebook page, mm-hmm. I'm sure, but
okay.
that page talks about what you do.
Yes, I own a portable planetarium, and I travel to schools, libraries, and stuff with that, and I do programs introducing people to the night sky during the day, and that's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com, or if you just search for my last name, Kinzer, and Seeing Stars, it'll lead you there. And lately on my website, too, I've been posting photos there, so you can see some of these.
Some really cool photos
I've taken.
Paul, thank you so much.
Sure.
Appreciate it very much. Paul Kinzer will be back. We'll have him on again for sure. It was great talking with him. And take a look at all the events that are coming on for Astronomy Day, not only on the 20th, but actually on several other days as well. And find him on my Facebook page. Tomorrow we'll talk about fitness with Ann Swartz of Kinesiology at UW-Milwaukee. And then Rick Seney of faircompare.com stops by. Stay with us. Lots in store.